Hey guys, this is Sam here. I'm sitting in a coffee shop editing the episode for this week. I wanted to drop you a quick note before we get started, and that's simply this. I know we've been off our normal schedule the last couple of weeks. We're doing that again this week. We're doing another interview. Starting with our next episode, we'll be back on kind of our normal rotation of going through the topics you guys have sent to us. But we thought this was good. We get to do this interview with some guys we know who have another podcast, and we think you guys will enjoy it. But I want to apologize for the audio quality. We're still figuring out our setup. We've had a lot of hardware issues, and we're trying to figure out the best setup to do interviews, and it just didn't work out super great this time, and so levels aren't amazing, but if you guys are able to push through that, we think you'll really enjoy the content this week. So without further ado, here we go.
He's a dirty hippie. I don't care what you say, Josh. You're waiting for your opportunity to move into a commune. You have visited communes.
Yes.
See, I never even got that far. I only got to like the online, like, look at our, take a virtual tour of our commune.
I think they're seriously following the way of Christ more seriously than a lot of people.
Yeah.
And
listen,
attractive and scary at the same time.
I'm not down on those hippies, man. I'm just saying
they're not really hippies, though. That's the thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Because wasn't the hippie movie more so about a lot of other cultural things? Whereas, like, the commune thing is more... Like, people lump... Like they do what he's doing and just, like, lump it. Oh, they're all the hippies. But, like, ideologically, I think there were just, like, some big differences.
Josh, how many times a week do you wash your hair?
How
many times a week do you wash your hair, just on average?
Per week?
Yeah, on a week. In just the average week, how many times do you think you're just scrubbing up that hair and giving her a good wash?
If I have to average it in weeks, it's definitely going to be 0 point something.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
Probably,
I don't get it.
Probably 0.
Once a day, baby.
Probably 0.5.
Once a day.
Probably 0.5 would be fair average.
Listen, I'm not even down.
Well,
I'm not saying you should wash your hair more.
I would probably say
rinse
once a week, wash maybe once every other week.
I'm just saying.
Rinse once a week?
I'm just saying, if you don't want to look like a hippie, that's not helping your image.
I did just like get a big cut and trim.
You did. You look like super presentable.
But I'm not gonna do anything to it until it gets as long as it was.
That's how you guys my thing about how I feel like I'm a libertarian socialist.
Really?
Like, I feel like I just live on both opposite ends of the spectrum. Like, I just really want the federal government to leave me alone. And then help all the poor people.
Sam, you want to join a commune?
Like, that's like, that really is what it comes down
Josh
to.
Josh is like, commune might fight me for you.
It really is, though. It's like, leave me alone. Let me live on my property like a Hoosier. And don't give me, like, communist restrictions.
Yeah.
And, like, just bare minimum involvement with me. But make sure all the poor people have food.
But should, but see, my thing is, should that not be on the church?
It totally should.
So
totally
the church
should.
Is failing.
I don't think the church is failing because I think it's impossible now. I actually
Wait, just because
it's
sheer magnitude.
Well,
mine's
so like,
the way people
so,
live.
Should we start recording?
We've been recording for like 10 minutes.
You're listening to Please Be Reasonable, where we seek to speak humbly and passionately about things that matter and things that don't.
Welcome to
Hello, hello. Welcome to Please Be Reasonable. I'm your co-host, Sam.
And I'm your co-host, Josh.
Guys, tonight we're hanging out with the guys from Give That Some Thought. Addison, hi.
What's up?
And Matt.
Hey.
You guys need to check out their show, Give That Some Thought. It is, it's pretty cool. We'll have them tell you guys about that in a minute. But we're doing a little something different tonight. We're just chatting with them about just hearing what's going on, hearing about them, their story, their show. Talk about a couple of the topics that are on our list for shows in the upcoming months and get some of their thoughts on it. So it'll be good. But yeah, you guys join us in the middle of the conversation. The reason I think the church can't do that stuff anymore. So like, if you go into the history of it, especially like even specifically in our area, that's how it worked out. Like Missouri Baptist Hospital was started by the St. Louis Metro Baptist Association. It was originally started and totally paid for and staffed by the Baptist churches in St. Louis. And when it started, that made sense, and it was doable, and it was possible.
Mm-hmm.
But now, like, there's just no way. There's no way that an association of 216 churches could pay to actually run a functioning modern hospital.
Yeah, all from like, even from, like, licensing and, like, the law and, like, compliance and things like that. It's just...
Yeah. It made total sense at the time, because it was like, hey, we have the resources, we have doctors, we have easy access to property, but now the system has become so complex. There's just no reasonable way for the church to do it, even on a large scale, like in the entire St. Louis metroplex. It just wouldn't work.
I think it's also the way people live. I think we're more closed off from community. The neighbors you see every day, like, you know, it used to be when you were poor, you saw the poor every day, you know. It was the poor family that lived down the road, right? But now it's, you know, homelessness is swept under the rug, or, you know,
that's very
just that or the other, and we're not confronted with it, and it's therefore we don't believe it to be a part of our community. Therefore, we don't think it's our problem to help fix. So we say, okay, the government's got it,
yeah,
or
absolutely.
okay, the United Way has it, or whomever.
You know. I can all hear my dog running around. This is like we switch where we record every week at his house or my house. And it's purely just convenience for me, like, so that I don't have to carry this stuff over and set it up. And every time we're here, there's this moment where you go, hey, hold on a second. And there's 10 minutes of dealing with dogs, walking around clicking.
Now, does your wife know that you call her a dog on the show? Or does she?
Come on now. I already told you we're having a rough night.
You can't tell
that's true.
You can't do that. Because there's definitely people feed Sam.
Yeah. Yeah,
so there are
she's dealing with the dogs
okay.
for us.
Okay.
There's
makes
the
sense.
Little beetle clicks. That's the book.
Yeah.
Man, I hate that dog. I love my wife and my daughter and my one dog.
Wow. What has the other dog been doing?
Oh, Bessie. Oh, she's just evil. Just pure. Just,
Yeah, we were over here for the.
I'm sure it conflicts with the
solar eclipse. We were over here for the solar eclipse because this house was in the path of totality.
Yes.
And while we were over here, your little dog, like, drank some toilet cleaner poison.
Yeah, she does things like that.
You guys were like, sort of like, oh no, and sort of like, well,
what happens happens.
Okay, let me give you a perfect summary of Mabel.
The Lord knows best.
Let me give you a perfect summary of my dog Mabel. The other day I'm cooking. And we've got one of those fridges where the freezer's in the bottom and it pulls out, right?
Uh-huh.
So I have the freezer sitting open. I'm kind of back and forth from the freezer and the skillet, making some stuff. And we've got a little slidey drawer, and it's got some of those, like, ice cream treats in it, ice cream bars and sandwiches and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mabel walks up and is like, oh, this is mine now.
Yeah.
And grabs one of these ice cream bars. The one, like, double-wide ice cream bar with the stick wrapped up in the paper. I turn around in time to see her, like, rah, rah, like, no teeth, just, like, throw it back, like, down her gullet. Disgusting. I'm just astounded. Like, I can't believe she just swallowed that entire thing in the package, and there's a stick in it.
In the package.
Yeah. Like, she didn't even chew it. She just took it down because she knew, like, she'll have a second. But then, whatever. I go on with my life. I don't worry about it. But, like, sure enough, 3 days later, one morning, I let her out.
Poops a stick.
She poops. First off, she poops on our walkway instead of our huge yard, but she poops on our walkway, and there's the popsicle stick. Unbent and unbroken.
Intact, that's insane.
Sticking out of she made a little poopsicle and just left it on the walkway. And she's a basset hound. She's not a huge dog.
You can tell he's the one that listens to give that some thought.
I'm just saying, you know that intestines at points have a 180-degree turn. There's a 180-degree turn in intestines at various points. And that popsicle stick made its way all the way through.
Are you going to use that in a sermon illustration?
No.
I think he just did.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
poopsicle.
Awesome. Poopsicle.
Oh, man.
Do you guys title your episodes?
Yes.
Because this one will have to be titled Poopsicle.
Give that some thought.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to say anything about dinos? Or are we not doing that tonight?
No, I'm going to try to take a detour and make a blog about to help Christians approach secular science resources. And, see if there's interest in that.
So you're getting paws on dinos, man.
And see if there's interest in talking about science from my perspective as Christianity and try to launch the dinosaur off of that. Okay. I'm still kind of working on that.
So. Does the blog already exist?
It does, but a lot of it's under construction, so okay. We'll talk about it next episode.
Okay, cool. Cool, cool, cool. So, guys, tell us about your show. tell us about that. I do have to say really quick to the listeners, this is round two of this.
You don't have to say this.
I have to admit it. This is the second time we've met with you guys and recorded, and we'll just leave it at that. That we don't have that original recording.
We do not.
So we don't wanna like try and pretend that conversation didn't happen.
Yeah.
But we also can't invite people into part two of a conversation, right? Like we got to.
I mean, we could like kind of like somebody. Star Wars Episode 4.
Yeah, but the prequel was good this time.
Just do a voiceover at the beginning of the episode. Previously.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, for real. So you guys have a podcast. You
want to
just tell us a little bit about that, the story behind it, and kind of what you guys do. And
well, I don't know. What is the story behind it? One day we were like, we should do a podcast.
The story behind it is that one day there was this terrible kid who I worked with who drove me bonkers. And then I found out that he was homeschooled, and I was like, oh, I guess he's part of my tribe.
Because
I was homeschooled my entire life, so was he, and so, you know, I was much more accepting to him and his
I remember when we found that out, it was at the corner of the bar.
Yeah,
you know, that you, it was right there by that POS.
Yeah. Because when the perfect person comes into your life, time stops, and you remember it for all of eternity. Yeah.
And you knew that you were both homeschooled, and yet you were both where you were now.
Yes.
Yeah.
But here's my question. Did you have to be told that it was homeschooled? Or was there just a moment where you're like, oh no.
I mentioned it to somebody.
You get some vibes?
Yeah.
Or maybe even, it's possible that someone, because I'm sure I had told somebody, I got made fun of it for a lot of that job. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe somebody was like, oh, you're homeschooled. And you were like, you were?
Yeah.
Like, I think that may have been, if I recall, because I don't recall the exact scenario.
Yep,
that was how we clicked.
But yeah, and so
and then we got a hotel. Oh, which
no,
part?
We didn't. And so we were coworkers for a long time, and then we became good friends, and we were both way into podcasting back before podcasting became a thing that it is now. It was back, you know, this was back when Ricky Gervais was doing his podcast.
Yes, that's my question. What podcast hooked you? Like, what was the podcast that made you go like,
oh, this is the Adam Carolla show for me.
Okay.
Huge into Adam Carolla, yeah.
Smod Talk with Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier. That was the one that was like, yeah, this. I mean, that was 10 years ago, you know.
That's
so my taste has changed. I haven't listened to a Kevin Smith podcast in several years because my taste has changed. But that was the one that really hooked me.
It was Night Vale for me. It was Relevant Magazine and Welcome to Night Vale, like at the same time.
I've heard really good things about Welcome to Night Vale.
I don't listen to any of them either anymore. Well, Welcome to Night Vale is cool. It's just like really creepy, surreal, but the same thing like over and over. So it's like it's really neat. But once you get about through about five of them, you're like, yeah,
okay, we'll get this.
I know the entire catalog.
Yeah. I listen to about half a dozen, and then
see people who love it right now are like slaughtering me in their minds because they're like, no, there's so much nuance to it. But no, it's you listen to six, you know the whole show.
For me, it was probably the Bad Christian podcast.
That was your first one?
Well, I actually had listened to podcasts like years ago when you had to like sync them to your computer on iTunes.
Yeah, to your like.
But it was so much work, and I didn't really do it for very long. But once it was actually an app and everybody was into it, somebody recommended that one to me.
Wow.
And now there's like a few things like of the Bad Christian like mindset or like philosophy that I really dig, and then the rest of it I get sick of really quickly.
Yeah,
but.
So my whole thing is, I worked at a church back then, and so that's basically a requirement if you work at a church, is you have to be super into podcasting. But what they mean by that is you listen to like 18 sermons a week.
Yeah, Christian podcasting is mostly just sermons, recorded sermons, right?
I listen to a lot of Mark Driscoll.
I've listened to Ravi Zacharias' entire catalog twice. So.
Really?
I like that guy.
I do too.
Okay, man,
I get it. Ravi Zacharias is great, but... But yeah, I haven't listened to him in a while.
All right, so you're homeschooled. You like podcasts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So
what
I guess
more is there to say?
Our story. Well, yeah, and then we did the tripod broadcasting because it was going to be with a buddy of ours. We wanted to do the three of us. And I don't think schedules ever linked up, and he was kind of like, I don't think he really gets
podcasting. He didn't want to do it. he wasn't as into it as you, yeah. You and I were. I remember the night it was birthed, though. We were sitting at that corner booth in Gingham's, yeah. Mm-hmm. St. Charles.
Where so many wonderful things in the St. Louis area.
Yep. You could fit 14 people in that corner booth, you know, with their unlimited salads and biscuits and gravy. And mm-hmm. we were sitting there post-meal, you know, in the post-meal.
We actually went to Gingham's after the part one of this one. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah. The post-meal, you know, your stuff with, you know, comfort food, and you're just sitting there and spitballing ideas back and forth. And we started talking about podcasts we were listening to.
Mm-hmm.
And we should do our own. We should take what we're doing here right now, these amazing conversations we have, this world-changing conversation we've just had that we can't remember anymore.
Yeah.
And we should do a podcast because other people need to hear our brilliance. Little did we know there were literally tens of thousands of people our age having the same idea. Thinking, we should do a podcast about it.
Yeah.
But you guys were a little bit ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Maybe by a hair, yeah. It seems like everybody does have a podcast now.
It's a new blogging.
Yeah, it really is. Well, have you heard of Anchor? Like Anchor is like an app now that you can literally go like this and...
Anchor sponsors are pleased.
If you... The Anchor's like, you can go like this, and then like, and I saw on the release notes for the latest edition or whatever, or the changelog, that you can like edit it now on your phone, and then just put it out there just like RSS, so like then anybody can get it through their podcatcher, like from an app. Like it's
crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Snapchat model.
I remember.
Yeah, it really is.
When we first started talking about the podcast, that was my biggest thing. My biggest holdup was just, everyone and their brother has a podcast. What can I possibly say that hasn't been said better by 50 other people?
Yeah, but would that stop you from doing a blog?
Yes.
Then you shouldn't be. But if you would ask yourself that,
it doesn't stop me from doing a sermon, though. Like I'm,
well,
you know,
see,
like,
yeah,
I'm
exactly
writing a sermon on a text. That
and
I
do you
know
think you're
going to
say something that Spurgeon hadn't?
Yeah. No. Well, yeah, probably because you know.
But you know what I mean? Like you still have to say it. Yeah.
All I have to do is reference an iPod.
Yeah,
I had a Spurgeon. I'm like, dude, Spurgeon. Let me know.
Yeah, so that was kind of the point for our show. And then we used to censor a whole lot.
Yeah,
like when we first started, we were like, the agreement was, we can say whatever we want, but then I'll censor it. Basically, like a network TV style bleep out.
His mom listened to the show.
She's never listened. It was my wife.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
and mom, wife, you know.
Yeah, they're the same.
Oh wow, there's a whole other discussion.
Sam's like, I've got a sermon on that. But no. So we used to censor everything, and then recently our schedules have tightened up a little bit more. With you doing some more hours, and then me, with my schedule, and so we now just put it up and try and not swear. I've noticed that you've kind of done that too, and
we
kind of try.
As with anything, once you've done something a couple hundred times with someone else, you know, it's, you get to understand it, you get to know it. So now it's, we sit down, do an hour, 15, and then he uploads it pretty quick. But it's not, we try not to censor ourselves topically, you know. Yeah. I don't, if I get a little fiery, get a little passionate, I might start to curse a little bit. But
you cursed at me on last week. You're like shut up. He was mad at me.
Well, you know, sometimes you need to be yelled at because you just keep talking and making stupid jokes when someone's trying to make a very good point.
I used to run over you a lot more.
The point that their entire argument is hinged on, right? And you just keep making stupid jokes over the top of it. Yeah, and we used to talk over each other a lot.
We
a
really
lot
did, yeah.
Than we do now.
That's been the biggest growing point. If you want to talk about the show itself, is that like we used to, like some of them are probably barely even listenable, but and now we're more.
You talk, I talk. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's a good thing for a good symbol or a picture of our friendship too, because like I said, you know, on the lost recording, our podcast really is about our friendship,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's about us discussing what's in the front of our brain at when we sit down to record. And it really, you know, the give and take of a friendship, learning, you know, we can't just both have both talk at the same time, we have to give the other person room to do what they're going to do and understand each other. And I don't know, most of the time, just talk about things we're not qualified to talk about and have fun. And that, I mean, you know, kind of like how you were sitting, maybe, you know, how our grandfathers would sit in their garages and drink beers with other guys on the block, you know? Just spitball. That's how it is.
So I remember when you first released the podcast, just because, whatever stage of life I was, when you, like, announced it on Facebook, I remember thinking, that's cool. That's cool. Like, wow, like, I know a guy who does a podcast.
Now,
wow, all right.
I know 100 guys who do a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. But I listened to, like right in the beginning, and then just, I stopped listening to podcasts basically totally right around that time because of just changes in jobs or whatever. I jumped back into your podcast in the election, literally because I was like, I need to know more about politics because I don't pay attention to politics. And I had this vague sense that I was like, I think Addison's podcast is about politics. And just jump back in and
it certainly was for that season. It really was. Like, we couldn't avoid it.
Oh, I mean, we were... This past election, Trump, right? Yeah. No, we were all about it, honestly. Like, that's the reason why we talked about it so much was because that's kind of our version of sports. Mm-hmm. Like, I watch baseball occasionally, but neither one of us are particularly into sports. So the spectacle...
Because they're stupid.
The spectacle of the election was kind of something that, you know, we can nerd out on. You know? I don't know.
I would love to hear... Because you guys go a little down, like, I don't know the polite way to say it. You go a little bit down, like, the conspiracy theory hole.
We do.
A little bit in your discussions. I would love to hear...
Down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, what kind of led you guys to that whole thing and what...
Me.
What about that world?
Yeah, it was you guys and... Yeah, I think Matt was way more into some conspiracy theories, probably, even from the beginning. And that was probably even something that, as our friendship group, you didn't even really share, because you don't share it right off the bat. I mean, you do a little bit more now, but it's, especially some of the really, because we've talked about, like, on the show, like, out there for everybody, we've talked about, like, some of the craziest things to me are not, like, you know, your card-carrying conspiracy theories, but, like, when you talk about, like, magic and its role in the Bible and stuff, to me, is, like, oh, wow. Like, that's... And that was kind of things that have piqued my interest and have, like, opened my... sort of going down that path myself, too. And I don't know what I believe and what I don't believe on them.
I don't even consider the whole...
Can we do this really quick? I know I'm interrupting you. So Josh hasn't really listened to the show. Will you just convince him? Will you just explain to him what meme magic is? And convince him that that's something.
You have to. Have you not come across that concept online?
What is it called?
Meme magic.
No.
Like the idea of like chaos. Well, yeah.
You understand what a meme is.
I'll let the doctor
is.
Handle
meme,
it.
Yes. Okay.
So meme magic is creating a meme or having a meme perpetuated in order to create a certain specific outcome that you desire.
Okay.
Donald Trump, for instance, was elected because of meme magic, because the memes were dank and plentiful, so the whole thing comes from 4chan. Are you familiar with 4chan?
Not directly, but yeah. Now, when you use meme, are you specifically referring to, like, square screenshot, white impact font, text, or are you speaking more generally?
Both. So memetics is a real thing,
right?
The science of memetics, like the thought viruses, how ideas transfer using short phrases or simple images, and you can transfer the same idea instantly without having to explain a concept. You can just kind of subconsciously convince somebody of something. I think that memes, the shortening of information from context to thoughts and feelings that you instantly have because of an image and a few words. I don't think it's a good thing. I think it's subverted the individual thinking process and give us a more of a herd mentality. So on 4chan, which is kind of the dirty back alley of the internet.
One of them.
Yeah, one of them. There's things.
It's basically the majority of the internet.
There are many alleys, though.
It's true. There's things called digits. Every post has a specific 7, 8, 9 letter or 9 number Yeah. That don't repeat. Okay, they just keep adding up. So people would post images of Pepe the Frog and link him to Donald Trump. And then you would say, digits confirm if I have dubs, the last two digits of my post end in the same number or trips, three numbers, this will occur.
It's like rolling the dice because it's random.
Yes.
Based on how many other people are posting at the same millisecond.
Mm-hmm. So, it kind of became a thing that it seemed weird, but Donald Trump images, Pepe the Frog promoting Donald Trump, kind of became a thing where you would have it inexplicably blessed with repeating digits. Triples, doubles, double triples, where it's like three, you know, a set of three and a set of three. Anyway, come to find out that there was this Egyptian god who is the god of chaos and darkness. One of the gods. There's two. He is. It's Kek and Keku, who are these two male and female gods of destruction and rebirth, right? So they're the darkness. They represent the night that comes before you can have the daylight and the rebirth, okay? They're represented in Egyptian mythology by a snake-headed woman and a frog-headed man. There is a statue in Cairo, in the Museum of Cairo, that's an image of a frog, and he's sitting on a pedestal, just a frog on a pedestal. On the pedestal is what looks like, it's a hieroglyph of a person looking at what looks like a computer, an old compact computer, and next to that is a hieroglyph of what looks like DNA, or the sharing of information. And so people kind of glommed onto this, is that memes have created the presidency of Donald Trump, and it's through our meme magic, our chaos magic, that we have memed him into the White House. That's a summation of meme
magic.
Theory.
And, yeah. That's the loose working theory.
I just read something that involved tech, and I thought of you and was going to text you guys and then get busy and forgot about it. Now I can't.
Yeah.
I can't come up with it now that we're here.
Yeah.
So, Josh.
So, I mean, that's fun. It's entertaining.
Well, let me ask you guys this, because this is the theology show. Do you guys think that, the Egyptian god that he mentioned,
mm-hmm.
or any others, do you think those represent to actual demons and or... I'm trying to figure out my phraseology here. But do you think they represent specific otherworldly beings? Does that make sense?
So that's like
maybe
really...
even like as you as a pastor, like so if somebody's like, I worship the sun god, or I worship the, like, are those specific entities, or is it? I mean, we know it's all of Satan, but do you think that there are entities other than? Does that make sense? What I'm asking?
Yeah, like, absolutely. So like, there's this.
And what do you believe on that?
Really common belief that
because there are mentioned in the Bible, like Beelzebub and stuff.
Yeah,
like
higher up demons or whatever claim a false god, and anyone who worships that false god, they're just like sucking it up or whatever.
Right.
I don't know what I think about that. I don't know. I really don't. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think there's enough.
I definitely, like, there definitely are circles of Christian thought that would definitely say, like, yeah, certain false gods or demons and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I don't know if there's enough. I don't think there's enough biblical evidence to make an assertion to go, oh, yes, like kind of like the Screwtape Letters thing, right? Like, oh, yes. Heck, that's beetle,
right.
Scab, monkey man, I don't know, however
right.
Says those named demons.
What about Elisha and the prophets of Baal? Like, is that not a wizard's duel? Is that not...
Yeah, well, and Moses and...
But see, these are the kind of things that he's in terms of our show and our friendship,
yeah, yeah.
Like, those are the kind of things that, like, if you had said that on, like, episode 60...
Yeah,
I would have had like that reaction,
mm-hmm.
and I had it on behalf of them here. But like, these are the kind of things that we talk about all the time on the show, and I'm like,
so then
interesting point.
Let me just give my gut reaction.
Elijah and the prophets of Baal is essentially just like a tribal rap battle.
So let me just give my gut reaction to the meme magic thing for the sake of conversation. Like, I'm not familiar with all those things, you know, and I'd have to look into it.
You are.
I love how Josh
is so kindly like, I'm going to reasonably and intelligently respond to this.
No, like I definitely think there's definitely a part to like think for yourself and look into things and that sort of thing. I have to admit, like, the skeptical part of me immediately jumps to like, Oh, that's probably a confirmation bias. Oh, that's...
Yes,
like,
it is.
Saying this looks like this, that probably is like an interpretation of something ambiguous that's being, you know, reinterpreted in hindsight, stuff like that.
Yeah. I think it is a confirmation bias. I think the real magic is in the science of memetics. That complex ideas can be digested and believed by people without having to understand any of the context around the idea, just by looking at one sentence and a couple words and a picture.
Yeah.
And that's a real thing. And I think that's, you know, it's people on 4chan may say it was meme magic that got Donald Trump elected, but no, it was the way he played the internet, you know, that really did convince people to vote for him.
What do you think about, I was wondering, I thought it might be fun to talk about, like, Christian conspiracy theories.
Oh,
or
yes.
maybe you wouldn't call them conspiracy theories.
No,
or maybe
I,
you
okay.
could trust it. But
I'm
like just an example that's like I'm thinking of is like with the solar eclipse, like there are like, you know, these posts about like these obscure interpretations of Revelation and like
Revelation 12.
This yeah, like this and like lining up like
the conjunction on,
stuff
on
about that and like and I actually I just
yeah.
saw somebody
that's like I'm very familiar. I published a few of my own.
somebody I know from that lives down in Texas was posting this thing about like, oh, we just had the solar eclipse, and then we just had this hurricane, and now there's going to be another one coming. And somebody posted a comment like, yeah, if you looked at, the solar eclipse was on the 21st, and Harvey landed on the 25th, and it caused flooding on the 26th. And if you look in Luke 21, 25 to 26, it says the sun and the moon will cause signs, and the roaring of the sea will make people tremble.
Now, Sam, you're a pastor.
I
got to
rewrite
my sermon
this weekend.
I don't know. Like, what do you think about all that?
I don't know. I guess I'm 29, and I was homeschooled my whole life, and I've been in church my whole life, and I really am so burned out on that type of stuff.
Like kind of the end times apocalyptic
stuff? Seriously, because
stuff.
I remember from, like, some of my earliest memories are going to churches and hearing people, like, shout about that sort of thing. And that's great. I don't... If you're into that, help yourself. But, like, I have no... Like, people ask me what I think about Revelation. Like, my friends and stuff, if we talk about, like, Revelation now or, like, what's going to happen, I'm like, oh, when it's over, it's over. Oh, I think we'll know when we get there.
I think that,
like,
especially in the 80s and 90s, I think that Bible prophecy was kind of an intellectual exercise for a lot of older men in the church. My grandfather and a lot of people that were, all his friends were into it, end times biblical prophecy, you know?
Well, we're talking about guys who were teenagers when Late Great Planet Earth came out.
Yeah.
Which, that affected an entire generation of, honestly, like, church youth group kids who then grew up going, this is a big deal. We don't talk about this. We have to think about this. Which would be like...
I'm not familiar with that.
Well, Late Great Planet Earth?
I've heard that. What is it,
oh,
a book?
Oh, man. It's a book from the 70s that basically does all... It was one of the first major American books that did all this. Interpreting Revelation through the lens of current events.
Yeah.
But that was like a huge deal with our parents' generation when they were high schoolers. Late Great Planet Earth came out, and it took the world by, took the church in America by storm, at least. And that worked its way into the culture in the 80s and 90s, where they, all of a sudden they grew up and they were.
Me
meant
it. And when did Left Behind kind of.
Late 90s,
yeah,
early 2000s,
yeah.
maybe.
Because,
yeah.
like, that. I remember
that, like,
when
that mainstream.
Everyone was, like, so into that. And I don't know. I'm so, like, I don't.
And we actually had one friend whose church taught that was, like, bad theology, and most of us, just, like, regular evangelicals, were like, what are you talking about? There's all these verses, it's obvious. And, like, now most of us are like, yeah, I think you were kind of right on that one.
Pretty bad theology.
I think I have a Left Behind graphic novel somewhere in this house.
Whoa.
I think
nice.
It's officially licensed.
I think, like, I don't know more...
That's awesome.
I don't know more generally, but a lot of that stuff, I feel like now... is very American-centric.
Yeah.
Especially, like some of the total, like, oh, it's the first total solar eclipse over America. It's like, yeah, but they've been over every other country every 18 months for, like, years. Like, there's this obsession with, like, oh, things only happen in America, and that's what matters to God.
Well, that's
But see, and not to cut you off, but, like, that speaks to, like, some of my frustrations with the church in general, too, because it's like, if you go to somebody... who's really suffering, whether it's from persecution or their poverty is at, like, extreme, you know, compared to what we have here or something, and you're like, are you prepared for the end of days? Like, if there's going to be a tribulation, like, they're like, what, dude, like, we don't have dinner. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's no, like, But we're over here like, well, we have to figure it out. And you're wrong because there is a tribulation. And you're wrong because there won't be. And there is. Like, really? Or we could just feed some people. Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's something for us to kind of get caught up in. Not that it's wholly unimportant, but...
So I've been reading this book. Called, we've been talking about a bunch called Misreading Scripture Through Western Eyes. And they talk about different cultural mores. So the subconscious aspects of your worldview that Westerners... Basically, the premise of the book is they say we do a really good job of analyzing the cultural context of Scripture and pulling out their social mores and going, oh, here were all the unspoken parts of their worldview. And we do a terrible job at identifying our own and seeing where we just assume them and read them into the text. And so one of the things they talked about is the American church's obsession with end times and how that's unparalleled in the majority of church history and in the majority of the church worldwide. Huh. And he basically, like, there's this part in the book where he's like, listen, it just comes down to the fact that Westerners and Americans specifically are really, really self-absorbed. Mm-hmm. And so they look at the end times and go, well, of course God's going to include me in the end times. Of course I'm going, why would he do the grand finale without me present to witness it?
Right.
Which I was like, oh yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
And you know there's another total solar eclipse going to pass from San Francisco through New York in 2024.
Yeah, I thought it was Texas to New York.
Oh, is it?
Whatever.
It's going to cross
Carbondale again.
It's going to cross the path of the other.
So clearly that means something, right?
And put an eclipse X across the continental United States.
Carbondale.
7 years, and they're 7 years apart. Six years and like 8 months.
So Jesus is
so close.
I mean, if Jesus came back in Carbondale, he'd be so disappointed. Seriously. Sorry, Carbondale.
Well, that's kind of mean.
I was just saying Carbondale's terrible.
Isn't Carbondale like the youth pastor capital of the world? Is that where they all come from?
Is that where the New Balance factory is or something?
I'm not sure.
Probably.
So really quick, if we're going to talk about Christian conspiracy theories, I have to throw my favorite one out there, which I've actually heard this one seriously discussed from believers through a mutual friend of ours. But it's the idea, so it's connected to the flat earth theory, but it comes from the idea that the Nephilim from Genesis 6 have, like, they rule the world in like Illuminati type ways behind the scenes, and they're the ones that started NASA. And they run NASA specifically as a propaganda arm to control how scientific research is disseminated out to the people so that they can trick us with things like evolution and, you know, whatever.
Because NASA came up with evolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do agree that NASA is mostly a propaganda arm at this point. I think.
But is it run
if you look at space flight, probably not, but if you look at space flight,
it's not run by the Nephilim.
Space flight in the past 20 years has gone from NASA putting men on the moon to NASA subcontracting out everything to Lockheed and Boeing, and then now it's SpaceX, right? And they've become slowly a kind of a propaganda arm, I think.
They did land a pretty cool rover on Mars a couple years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're still doing stuff, but they're mostly a face for, I think, scientism.
It's become politicized and kind of corporatized and whatever.
I think they function a lot in the same way that Neil deGrasse Tyson does, as being, or Stephen Hawking, as being the absolute authority on science. So if you disagree with this person, then
you're clearly an idiot.
Exactly.
And I thought Neil deGrasse Tyson's role was to be really obnoxious during cultural moments. Just to go on Twitter and be like, actually, that thing you're enjoying is not real.
Actually.
Oh, man. I couldn't even come up with a good one. That was a terrible joke.
But the Nephilim stuff is always something that's fascinated me.
He got me into the,
you know,
the Nephilim. He introduced me to them, if you will.
some short little blurbs, but there's a lot in there in that passage, you know, from... Noah being called perfect in his generations, like, what does that mean? What does that really mean? Like, the idea that there... Okay, so my personal idea is that humans have something in us that is innate to us, and then no other creature has it. That's what it means when it says man and woman he made in his image, right? We were made in the image of God. Does that mean that we look, our bodies look like God? Well, probably not. It means that there's something about us.
Gosh,
right?
I hope not.
Our souls intrinsically have permanence beyond this physical and spiritual reality. I think that the physical world and the spiritual world are two sides of the same coin that God created in creation. Okay? And I think that we permeate beyond that, however that means, whether that means heaven or however you would fill in the blank. For Christians, it would be heaven. So we go back to God in the new heaven and the new earth, right? The new universe to be created. Satan does not, right? Lucifer does not. He is a created being. Angels and demons and all that, they're created beings, whether spiritual or physical, who exist in this reality. And I think the Genesis 6 account was Satan trying to debase humanity so much that we would lose that internal spark, that soul. And also trying to himself attain that through genetic manipulation. And, you know, it says that there were giants on those days, on earth in those days, and afterwards. You know, there was mighty men of old, men of renown, who could do amazing things. They were the kings of the earth. No one questioned their right to rule because they were beyond our comprehension. I think it's kind of the spiritual beings with their spiritual powers and the physical beings with their physicality. I don't know, kind of some sort of manipulation. You know, who can say what Satan's plans were?
I still need to read the Book of Enoch. Doesn't Enoch have some?
Yeah, he's talked about the Book of Enoch quite a bit.
I have it, but I've never taken the time to make it through.
I don't know. I don't feel like I have anything interesting to contribute to that. Just because I'm like, yeah, that's interesting. I have no idea what the deal. I'm curious, just in the discussion of like theological beliefs that are a little more like fringe or whatever. And you just made me think of this when you were saying that. I'd be curious. Have you ever read or thought about the idea that the human soul, the Bible teaches the human soul is not inherently eternal? Have you ever read anything about that process? Conditionalism?
No, not so much.
So it basically centers around this idea of going back to Genesis 1.
We talked about this a little bit in our episode.
We talked about this in our episode on hell a little bit. But the really short version is, if you read the account with the trees, so they eat the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and then God's like, hey, we can't let them eat of the tree of life, or else they'll live forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then essentially, like, if you think through some relatively famous Christian passages, we assume the eternality of the soul into them when they don't expressly say it. So, like, John 3:16, for God's love of the world, he has only begotten Son, that whoever shall believe in him shall not perish, mm-hmm. but have eternal life.
Hmm.
The idea being that human beings are not created inherently eternal, but the gospel is the gift of eternal life that he gives to the elect, mm-hmm. and that the natural inherent eternality of the soul was a Greek idea that entered into Jewish thought, like, around the time of Hellenization, and wasn't actually in the original text. It's a really weird, like, it's a super fringe belief, but it's actually, like,
that fringe, it's just uncommon it's unfamiliar to us.
I mean, isn't that the definition of fringe? Not many people believe it.
Yeah, what's the term again?
Conditionalism?
And then it kind of relates to annihilationism, which is more specifically the name of a view regarding hell, that hell exists, but it's not eternal. It's a place where you get sent, and then you become annihilated.
Yeah, so the way conditionalism works out with eternal judgment is this idea that there's a resurrection of everyone. And so, like, all these non-eternal souls are resurrected, given their judgment, and gone, hey, guess what? You didn't get eternal life. And then just put back to their state of no longer existing. It's a really interesting theological construct.
And they don't exist for however long.
Yeah, they just cease. They're snuffed out. And so their eternal punishment is not existing. Instead of...
That does sound rough.
It's a pretty bad one. I mean, I don't know. I might take that over eternal conscious punishment, you know?
Right.
Suffering and all those things, but anyway.
I don't know, man. To exist, even in pain, to exist is to exist. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how I would think about
that.
Talk
about the worst would you rather ever. Would you rather...
not exist or exist forever and go to hell.
Definitely not exist.
I want to ask them about our previous topic and our next topic.
Do it.
So real quick, one of the reasons why we reached out to you guys initially is just this whole idea that you guys represent a huge amount of the demographic of why we created this podcast. We basically said, hey, here are these people.
We're their project.
Yeah, exactly.
we're going to try to save you.
Yeah, so I have this thing called a track. Have you heard of the four circles? We're going to go through this real quick.
I prefer to take the Romans Road.
No, but for real, like, the reason we came up with this podcast in the first place is basically just looking back at our own hyper-conservative, in some ways, fundamentalist Christian upbringing and going, what's some of the weird tensions that's left us with as an adult of, like, just working through different ideas and, like, how we view the world now and things that we are allowed to talk about. And
the broad spectrum of people that came out of that and where they are now.
Yeah, yeah. Like, how basically that was most of both of our whole circle of friends in childhood, and now as adults, like, looking out at the fruit that culture has actually born.
What it produced, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so you guys grew up in similar setting, like conservative homeschool homes, and you are, like, not living the way that I think most hyper-conservative fundamentalist homeschools would be aiming for. But I don't think we are either. I think that's interesting, right? I think you guys have a cool perspective to say, we grew up in this, and we are satisfied with how our, you know, like, this is the direction our lives have taken, and here's the reasons why we thought through that. So we just thought you guys would have a cool voice, a unique perspective to speak into some of the stuff we're talking about. But I don't know if you have any just, like, general, really quick thoughts on growing up conservative homeschoolers and what kind of led you to where you are now.
I think the difference between Matt in the 90s and Matt today is a lot of the switch in culture, too, because my parents, you know, their big rebellion was against the hippie movement, right? Mm-hmm. Against that sort of ideology. And so they're coming out of the satanic panic of the 80s, right?
Where D&D, I'm going to use that term. I like that.
Where D&D was going to send you to hell, and, you know, Alice Cooper was doing his thing, and, you know, Kiss equaled Knights in Satan's Service.
Have you guys read the Chick Track about D&D, on a side note?
No. I might have seen that.
You know Chick Tracks, though, right? Oh my gosh, dude. Chick Tracks are these awesome.
Do you have any?
I have them somewhere.
You should.
They're these little, like, black and white comic books that are tracks, but they're always the exact same story, but told in a different way. Someone's like, I believe in evolution! And then someone's like,
I think I've seen those. I'm just not familiar with that term.
Yeah. Well, they're made by Chick Publication.
Okay, that's. Yeah. We had millions of those at my church growing up.
They have one on D&D that is the best thing on earth, where this guy joins a D&D group only to find out it's a front for an actual witch and warlocks coven who use D&D to initiate them into their coven. And there's a point where it's like, the guy's like, I've reached level 20, now what? Now you come into the real adventure. And he, like, takes them into a back room, and they're, like, sacrificing a goat or something. It's crazy. Anyway.
Well, see, you speak of covens. Did you listen to our most recent episode?
I haven't. I'm behind.
Well, I don't want to spoil it for you, but Matt posited this theory, and I don't know how I feel about it yet.
Oh, no.
Did you listen to it?
I was actually listening to it as you pulled up, but I'm only about 20 minutes in.
Okay, did you hear the part about the coven?
Nope.
Then I'm spoiling the episode later on for you. I'm spoiling the whole thing for you.
Spoil it.
Matt posited this theory that...
I have no proof, but this is my gut.
Epistemological status is highly speculative.
It is his gut. Well, but didn't you mention some proof on there? Well, you mentioned some connections, some loose connections.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Kardashians. The theory is that they're a coven of witches and they are bewitching American society through celebrity.
Wow.
Yeah.
Specifically preying on...
Are there celebrity spells?
Of course. Well, everybody knows that.
So, what type of wood is traditionally used in a magic wand?
I don't know. There's phoenix feather in the middle.
The wood of holly branch is best.
Okay.
So, Hollywood. You would use.
See... My thought is, what the group
to bewitch and hypnotize and beguile.
The group that would be most open.
You
to
see what
that,
I mean? Now you do 100 episodes of that.
I feel like the demographic that would be most receptive to that theory would be the demographic you grew up in.
I know.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, see, that's okay. So actually, coming full circle to the question that you just asked about how we were raised, I think a lot of it, even the way that we do our show, is sort of a hangover from being raised that way, really. You know, because my mom was very much a demon under every rock. Like, literally, like she, you know, and I don't, and you mentioned your grandma, I think.
My nana was.
Yeah. But, she was more like into casting out demons,
yes.
right? Like,
yeah,
she
no,
would,
she
like,
would
pray over
her
things.
House and pray over things, and she had her menorah, and she had her little holy water, and she would... She would literally like go through the house.
So more
and, like
a Catholic type exorcism than like a charismatic.
No, she was actually very very charismatic, like almost Pentecostal. She goes to Messianic temple now, but at the time she was very evangelical Pentecostal. But you know, I can remember her going through her house and touching doorposts and praying and like doing these hand motions towards the room and legitimately like. Casting out demons or blessing the place, you know, removing of curses. That was another her thing. Like things, object, places can be cursed, and you need to watch what you bring into your life energetically. And this is all coming from a woman who was like 100% full on evangelical too. So,
oh yeah, absolutely. That
definitely
exists.
30% of that
definitely exists in that world. I've had conversations with people before who talked about like the. Satanic things built into architecture, and so that like puts curses over like specific neighborhoods and cities, and like how like one of the best things in the world is to like tear down parts of the city and rebuild it because it like helps break curses to like change the architecture and stuff like that. Yeah,
his whole thing is the symbolism. He's more into this. In the way, I guess you've heard, you know, on the show we've talked about different like logos and different things like that. Like, and it's. You gotta wonder, because I was actually talking to a buddy of mine who used to listen to the show really regularly, and he's since stopped. And because he said he felt like a lot of it was like sort of the Hell's Bells type idea of the rock music, which we talked about a little bit on the Lost Archive. But
so he felt guilty about the fact he's listening to satanic music?
No. No, he thinks that idea is... Based on his experience, he thinks that there's not really much to the idea that there's Satanism in music, and that it's sort of projecting that value on people, or musicians themselves using certain imagery for the imagery's sake, and not necessarily glorification of Satan. And my
mind the fact that like Satanism itself is a secular movement that has nothing. Worship of Satan, and like they're using that imagery.
Well, the
for
occult,
shock and awe.
I think, more.
Yeah.
But even still, though, so my whole thing is that like, but some of that has to be real, right? Like, because like when we talk about Pizzagate too, like that was kind of my because like it's basically insane to believe that a pizza shop in DC runs kids like for a sex trafficking ring for the DNC. Like that's insane. But there's so much of this other...
That was just the update on their episode. That was on the record, guys.
But do you know what I mean? But like, there's so many other things, and even things that have been proven, and court cases have been tried, and it's like, so something has to be true to that. And that's how I kind of look at like the imagery and the symbolism and the occult through Hollywood or other media, and it's like, no, I'm not going to sit here and say that like everything is, you know, some type of bewitching element, but some... Not all of it is just, oh, that's there. You know
yeah,
what
I mean? That's C.S. Lewis's whole thing, right? Is like, you have to find this balance where, like, the worst thing in the world is, you know, like, pretending that, like, evil spirits and demons don't exist, but, like, almost, you know what I mean? Like, obsessing over them is just as bad. Like,
yeah,
you have to find a middle ground where it's like, okay, yeah, this is, you can't affirm the scripture as true and not affirm the reality of evil spirits and demons and spiritual warfare and all those things.
Or maybe like we were saying, like with NASA, you can reject all the stuff about, oh, they're faking moon landings and whatever, and still also like think that there's a shortcoming in kind of the totality of the worldview.
Right.
that maybe, you know, there's more more going on.
Right.
So this kind of loops back to the original question that you guys are bringing. I would love, we spent a couple episodes talking about morality, like how morality is constructed, and Christian morality versus secular morality. We interviewed Andy Ingracia is a guy we've had on a couple of times, an agnostic guy, kind of like pushed back on some of our thoughts about the necessity of morality, and he talked about how you can construct a morality purely secularly with no divine revelation. I would love to hear you guys speak into this, because I feel like there are certain specific areas where you guys have made choices to step away from what we would call like the traditional evangelical morality, like language or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I would love to hear you guys just discuss that, like how that engages your faith, like some
and,
of the, yeah, you guys, you know, just,
things where
you know,
stepped away, but then
sexist
other
and racist jokes all the time. Like, how do you live with yourself?
Drugs, but in the context of things that you haven't, you know, deviated from.
Yeah, because you also have areas where you've like we just talked about, like a spiritual warfare. When this is. That's real. That's important. I want to care about that. Like,
yeah.
How has that worked out for you guys?
Well, my ticket. I was going to make it terribly. Yeah. Well, you. Maybe we're going in the opposite direction. Because, and if you think about this, because probably 2 years ago, when we were maybe in episode 50s-ish or uh-huh. somewhere in there,
uh-huh.
you, I think at one point you said on the show, I don't consider myself a Christian.
Yeah.
And that bothered my wife. And because she was like, really? Like, what is, like, what's up with Matt? You know? And I was like, I don't know.
Like, she's using chick checks.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, leave some of these.
His D&D games are going to send him to hell. But now you're much more.
I am a Christian. I don't call myself that just because I don't. I prefer to let my individual actions speak for themselves.
It didn't feel like you even had an opinion on that.
Yeah.
At that time. Now maybe you just didn't share. We had to get to that point or whatever.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like you had much of an opinion on that.
Yeah. I mean, I've always wrestled a lot hard since I was. Even since I was, you know, growing up in being homeschooled and everything, and in church and everything, with a hard time with shame. Feeling like you, especially because it was always small churches, small communities of homeschoolers. So if you did something that wasn't very good, everyone knew about it. Everyone. And my early 20s, I took a hard nosedive into sin pretty bad. And everyone, or at least I thought everyone, that I knew knew about it, and so my response was to run, and just run and run and run and run, and deny, and be like, nope, I'm this totally different thing now. That's definitely not the person who for 22 years lived and breathed church as second home. That's not me anymore. That's not me. And it took like a decade or so before everything caught up with that, and I realized, oh. Oh, everybody has shame, and everybody is ashamed. And if you threw back the blankets of their lives, you'd see all the cockroaches skitter out, you know, turned on the lights in their room. They would be ashamed, too, and they'd be just in the same situation. It just happens that the dice fell, that you were the one that everybody pointed to as the cautionary tale of, hey, you know, you better stay on that homeschool path all the way through college, or you'll end up like... You'll end up like Matt, you know? And so that was my journey out of and then back to it. I'm still not... I'm not 100% comfortable with the Christian lifestyle. I think, I don't know, the church, it just feels stuffy. But at the same time, when I go back to it or hang out with the people that I used to know 10 years ago, used to be a part of their group, you know, because my sisters, I have a large family, I got seven brothers and sisters, you know.
Classic homeschool.
Yeah, exactly. It still feels like the same friendships are there, the same community is there. Recently, one of the guys we hired, I'm a sous chef for a restaurant in Cottleville, and we hired this this cook who at first I didn't recognize who he was.
Oh, I know you're talking about.
And it took me about a week. He was just so familiar, his face was. And I realized it. I'm like, did you go to Grace Community Chapel in St. Peter's? He's like, yeah. He's like, I remember you from Awana. From Awana Clubs. At Grace Community Chapel. I was his game director for Awana when I was 19
awesome.
And he was 7. And now he's, you know, working in the kitchen with me. And he's right at that point, too. Like, 2 years ago, he just took a big, hard nosedive. Like, right into a big pile of sin. And now he doesn't have anything to do with his family. He's got, like, one sister he talks to. And he had a big family just like me. And, you know, he doesn't talk to his parents or other brothers or sisters that much. And I feel like I was in that boat. I knew that boat. Like, you just don't want to be around them anymore, you know. You feel like the sin has become this, or the shame of whatever is, you know, you can never go back there. But I mean, you can. And so I think my ministry is, you know, we watched, he came over to the apartment for my Game of Thrones party last Sunday. I'll be able to minister to the kid a little bit. I think I already am. But, yeah, I mean, stuff like that. Just knowing that the church is my home and my heritage too. It's not just my personal faith, but it's my personal faith that affects everyone around me too.
Yeah.
And I'm probably never going to be able to escape that. And unlike I was 5 or 8 years ago, I'm okay with not escaping it because it's written into the very fabric of my DNA. And if that's who I'm supposed to be, then that's who God made me to be, then running away from it is just going to be kicking against the goads. It's just going to be Jonah getting on a ship and going where he's not supposed to go. So
first off, like, thanks for sharing that with us. Like, I feel like that was like a
yeah, it was
intimate
awesome,
part of your story, and like, you barely know us, and that's like really cool. legitimately, I love the way you're able to affirm the communal aspect of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we live in such an individualistic culture, and even the church has grabbed onto this idea of, like, you know, you have a personal relationship with Jesus, but the reality is, like, it was never designed to be that way.
Yeah.
The church is a community, and there's no, like, you don't lose your pinky toe without noticing it. You know what I mean? And there's no way for something to happen to the body and it to not have an effect on the rest of the body. Like, that, just that awareness is...
We don't have that anymore, man.
That's really cool. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but, like, are you involved in a church now?
No.
No.
No. Work, I can't with work.
Sous chef, you're probably going to be in there.
Yeah, I just had a 10-hour shift today. But also the breakfast menu, we do a Sunday brunch. And we do cater a lot of church people on this on a Sunday brunch. But
so we got to get Red Tree
back
kind of
run
there,
that.
That's on us.
Yeah.
We got to get Red Tree back in there. See,
that's,
you're in the background.
That's actually kind of a major point of I guess, guilt or, like, nagging of the Holy Spirit right now in my life is that I do need to get back. Because it's not, you know, if I go to church, I can make time for church, you know. There's church every night of the week, you know. So this the whole work
no,
schedule
AA
is just... Well,
those are every night.
Maybe
of the
I should do that too. Just tie it all in.
Oh, wow.
But I do feel like it's time to get back reinserted in that. And I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know. My whole thing is that, like, to speak a little bit to, like, what you were saying.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm crushed under, like, that individualism right now. If I had to describe a place where I'm at, I feel like I'm crushed under the idea of individualism. Mm. Like, me and my wife have 2 young kids, and I feel like, and due to some circumstances that are outside our control, or were, or whatever, you know, we've got pretty hectic schedules, and it's insane to try and figure out, like what being a Christian even means. And unfortunately for me right now, it means going to church on a Sunday, and I don't like that. So, and I don't know how to sort of transition back. And I've always, it's weird even growing up, because I grew up super, more strict than you did, even.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we were Like, they, there were people in my church growing up that believed that if you, that you shouldn't have a deck of playing cards because they were an instrument of gaming and it could allow an entrance of Satan into your life.
And DC Talk was off limits, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. way off limits. which is funny because my mom's kind of come full circle because I, like, the first CD that I ever brought into the house was that wasn't like classical music because that was the only thing allowed in our house. The first CD that I ever brought into the house. Yeah. Yeah, classical only growing up.
You didn't have any Carmen or Sandy Patty to keep the company?
Well, she had a little bit of...
no Striper?
I think it was Sandy Patty and... because she had some praise tapes that she would listen to. Sandy Patty and what's the other one? Maranatha something.
Twyla Paris?
Twyla Paris, I think, was some, yeah. But anyways, yeah, the first CD that I brought in was Switchfoot's third album.
Beautiful Letdown?
Yes, Beautiful Letdown. And brought that into the house, and I was like, it was like, it's got to be like your first time smoking weed. Like, I remember laying in my bed and listening to it and going like, this is the greatest. Like, this is, I was just blown away. I'm like, this is incredible.
This was the more I was meant to live for.
But I was like the just the lyrics and the music and here's people of faith that, you know, that aren't shoving an idealistic faith down your throat, but that seem to be real about your faith. Like, I don't know if one of them's come out as gay yet or whatever, but it was something that I was experiencing and I was like, wow. And then I remember my mom was really upset with me because I think it was senior year or maybe it was right after I graduated. I went to a Toby Mac concert.
Wow.
And she was, yeah. It was the Portable Sounds Tour, actually, to give you an idea. So, yeah, it wasn't even during his good days either. But
it wasn't even good. It wasn't even worth it.
Well, I mean, if I had to choose what Toby Mac I could go see, like what tour probably, it would probably be like the album before that or maybe even the one before that. But anyways, and yeah, my mom was really upset that I went to that concert. Like, really upset. And that kind of pushed me away. And so I was kind of like, well, that's not really for me. And I only stayed away for like maybe 2 years, 18 months, 2 years. And then I got back into college, and there were a lot of people there that were real. And it was funny because I met Meredith at the time, and she was kind of living a little bit of a double life of, like, I'm going to do what my...
She was a secret agent, wasn't she?
She was. Like, I'm going to do what my parents want me to do, which was super strict, exactly the way that I was raised. But then at college, I'll kind of act on and believe what I truly do believe. And I think me coming along kind of, because I started going to Harvest Bible Chapel, which is a part of a James McDonald church plant. Yeah. And I was kind of like past all of that sort of legalistic type thing. And so then we kind of had to sort a lot of things out for ourselves. But I miss doing that because I haven't done that in years. Like, I haven't seriously thought about anything in years. So to answer your question of on the show, like, I just don't think about it.
Yeah.
And I guess that's really bad. Like, that probably makes me a really terrible person. You know what I mean? Like, because I don't know. Like, and here's my thing about language. Like, I would never, like, if I know that you're offended by certain vernacular, certain types of jokes, then I most certainly wouldn't use that around you because I don't want to do that. But if you're not...
You're just talking on podcast.
Yeah, and you can choose to listen to it or not if you want to. I wouldn't go up to my grandma and curse at her, right? Because I know that vernacular is not going to do that. I'll walk into his house and curse it in his face because that vernacular is going to resonate with him. Does that make it right? No. But...
We should do an episode about the... Linguistics. Supposed cursing in the Bible.
We should. You know, it's funny hearing the way you said it.
Like, that was all super random. Sorry.
No, it's good. The way you said, like, you just don't think about it is so good because. So we've done like 3 episodes on morality now. And when I'm researching them and we're prepping for them, I'm like, oh man, like, this is so interesting, and like, oh, like, is your moral code created by revelation, or do you have an internal standard, and blah, like, all this different stuff. But then when you're actually just out living your life, like, you're not actively going, now wait a minute.
Is this right or wrong?
I have a third-party standard that has informed me.
Let me
that this is the,
run,
you know,
my,
I mean,
moral,
like,
calculation,
right,
subroutine.
Yeah, yeah. It just doesn't work that way. Which is interesting, because essentially we're just all moral hypocrites at that point.
Hmm.
At least on little stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like we probably have pretty hard lines of things that are really right and really wrong.
Yeah.
And it's just the stuff that's kind of right and kind of wrong that we're like, I don't really think about that.
But then also, in terms of the show, that's also been a little bit of a basis for our show, too, is that, like, we want to talk about things that maybe aren't clear. Because we've talked about abortion before, and, like how we look at that, and, like,
yeah.
Is it right? Is it wrong? Or where does it all fall down, and where do you believe that life begins? And, like, all that, those sorts of questions, you know, which I guess is, like, an age-old topic now. But, like, things like that we want to, or even things, you know, like, with what happened in St. Louis, like, with Ferguson and stuff, you know, like, where does all this stuff kind of shake out?
Yeah.
You know? That's kind of the basis for the show, is that we want to talk about things like that.
You're saying, think...
Even though we only do it about every 10th episode now.
But you're saying that's a vehicle to think through things that you wouldn't maybe think about otherwise.
Yeah, exactly.
Or think
yeah.
through talking, articulating thoughts.
Yeah. We usually each have about one or two things, like articles, news articles on the web or whatever we want, topics we want to talk about. And we usually get to about half of one. It's just tangents. Which I'm totally fine with, because that's the free form kind of, that's the way we are conversationally with each other. So that's kind of what it's been. But I think going to the morality question, it's hard to tack down in our society what actual morality is. Like, I think if you walk up to a person and say, hey, what is morality? I think they would have a hard time giving you a definite answer. Like, is it a list of absolutes? Is it the law? What is it? I don't think it's the law. It's not man's law anyway at all. But, you know, I think we have so many conflicts over morality,
mm-hmm.
which in itself is immoral, to have that sort of deep-seated conflict. Like, you take the alt-right versus Antifa, right? Like, that whole stuff that's been played up in the news, which I think it's been the Charlottesville stuff, right? Been played up in the news to be a bigger deal than it actually is. But, you know, Nazis versus the social justice warrior ideology, and they both think that they're right. And they're both being completely immoral in the way that they're going about enforcing their morals. And I think that's the biggest hurdle that we have to get over in our culture today, is treading up and just walking on the necks of everybody else in order to push our own version of what right is. And 5,000 years of Western civilization has taught us that we have wildly varying ideas about what right and what moral is. We're not done having the conversation about it yet as a society and as cultures. And we're not going to ever stop. But I hope we don't, because I think that's kind of what refines us as people and as cultures, too. I don't necessarily think it's the church's responsibility to make sure... It's not the church's responsibility to make sure everybody else is following our morals. But it is our responsibility to do our best to adhere to the morals of Scripture and to help other people do the same.
See, we don't have time to talk about this, but that's that's like a soapbox for me. Like, I think if you're a Christian, you hold to the historical Christian faith. Like, you can't get around the fact that the Bible argues for a very specific moral construct for you to live by as a believer, but then goes out of its way to let you know that's for you if you're a believer.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't expect unbelievers to follow that compass. And there's this weird cultural obsession that seems to just exist within, like, American evangelical Christianity, where we think, I am doing God's will by trying to enforce a Christian morality on the culture around me, regardless of whether or not they submit to the Scripture that actually commands that morality, which just drives me off the wall.
And we see the backlash that causes. Like, Westboro Baptist is the perfect example of that. You have a group of people whose ideas about scripture I don't agree with. But, you know, there's some stuff that I sit down with a deacon from Westboro Baptist. We could talk for hours and hours about all the things we do agree with. I do agree with them about. But there's
one of the daughters of the guy.
She's out. Yeah,
she came to Lindenwood and spoke.
Really?
Yeah, we took students to listen.
But what happened was she went on Twitter to be antagonistic and fight the people she was against, and somebody started conversing with her.
Yeah, Words with Friends.
Really?
Yeah. I've read them. I think
they whatever the detail was, they built a relationship, and then that kind of just opened her eyes to my worldview was wrong about these people.
And she
brought other people out of it.
It's funny because I was friends with her on Facebook before. I added her when all the Kevin Smith stuff went down because, he made that movie Red State, and it was kind of about the Westboro Baptist Church.
Huh.
And I added her on Facebook, and I'm still friends. I checked the other day. I was like, I wonder if I'm still friends with her, and I still am. And I was like, that's nuts.
So if you really want to be just weirded out by the whole, fact that Westboro Baptist Church is an evangelical Christian church, her dad, they got
Fred
connected
Phelps.
With the church.
Is that his name?
No, that's, the girl who came to Lindenwood wasn't directly related to Fred.
Oh, that's maybe somebody different then.
But anyway, her dad, they got connected with the church because her dad was making a documentary about the church and did all these in-depth interviews with Fred Phelps. And it's available for free on YouTube. I can't remember the name of it. But,
oh, and that's how they got involved?
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so weird. Because there's some stuff where, if you just cut a clip out of context and you didn't know it was Fred Phelps, you'd just be like, oh, it's just a crotchety old Baptist pastor.
Yeah.
And then he, turns a corner and is like, God wants us. God is judging our country because of gay people. We need to go tell everyone that. And it's like, whoa, how did you get from crotchety old Baptist to this?
See,
and then he goes into in-depth strategy on how to make their signs and how they make their signs really high quality.
Yeah, they really do. Yeah.
What is going on here?
They're actually really into it. I've read some of that type of stuff, yeah.
But to speak more to that, though, yeah. Of all if they were atheists, they'd just be really successful sign makers. Oh, man.
But to speak a little more to that, I guess my thought is that, I don't want people to be turned off by hearing that I'm a Christian or that I go to church.
Yeah.
Because bridging that gap, I would say, is so important to me. Not that I'm actively trying to do it, but what Matt said a second ago about the guy from work, right? And you were like, I do feel like I'm ministering to him. You used that phrase, that exact phrase, and then you said I had him over to watch Game of Thrones. If I told my mom that, Matt is trying to minister to this guy, and they watch Game of Thrones, her head would explode.
Yeah, smoke.
It would just and it. It
there wasn't any nudity in the last episode. It was fun. Okay, never mind. No, actually, there was for it.
Yeah, isn't that when they revealed the incest? That's what I thought.
Spoiler alert!
I see the headlines on Twitter.
Yeah, you cut that out for spoilers.
That's a spoiler.
Why.
Show's terrible.
Whatever.
Dragons are the dumbest fictional being.
Glad that Jordan Peterson.
That's gonna walk out.
I feel like spend time actively thinking through
pushing mouse buttons.
How can I encapsulate a phrase that will be the most efficient to say quickly and anger the most amount of people?
I just
need a catchphrase that ticks people off. But anyway,
please, America, you're great again.
So I don't want to keep you guys forever. So I want to ask
what I was going to say was but that mindset, I think that's what you have to have as a Christian.
Yeah.
And if you were going to watch Game of Thrones and it's going to be a problem for you, then by no means should you do it, right? If that's going to come in between your walk with Christ. But if it doesn't, and you can minister to someone and be in their lives as a result of Game of Thrones, for example, then shouldn't you be a part of that or try and be as active in their lives as you possibly can? But that's not an excuse to do anything. Obviously that's not just a blanket, well, we're hosting this orgy in Jesus' name. You can't, you're right, it doesn't,
yeah.
It doesn't compute. But where in the world and not of it is something that I think about a lot, and I don't know how it works.
I think that's super interesting.
I would like some answers, Pastor.
That's digging directly into the realm of what is and isn't a moral compass, right? Because you're getting down to the fact of like, you drew a line, right? Mm-hmm. You couldn't go, oh yeah, we're going to host an orgy for, like, to the glory of Jesus.
Right.
Like, that is obviously right. in the realm of wrong. But they're like, oh, but this TV show with some graphic violence and graphic nudity, like, well, maybe that's enough in the gray area that I could partake in that to the glory of God.
Right.
Yeah. I really, like, that's a hard one, man, because you really are, like, you're getting into this realm where it's like, we do need to have, like, we need to be in the world, but we also need to be not of the world.
Right.
That's something that Christians called to, and so it's like how...
And, too, I think we like easy answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like...
Yeah, and I think that's the piece, too.
Then, yeah, the world's just more complex than that.
Yeah, is you have to be able to... You have to be able to be contextual.
So just listen to the Holy Spirit and figure it out.
Now,
yeah.
I'll be straight up, like, from my personal conviction, I couldn't do that.
Right. And that's, like, that's fine, right? But if...
Unless we wanted to,
but if somebody went and said, let's have a beer together,
yeah,
like you would.
Absolutely.
But some people, mm-hmm. as
yeah.
an example,
yeah.
like they shouldn't have that beer because they're going to want to have 12. And that's how they know that about themselves.
And
right?
even taking a step further, some Christians wouldn't even go that way. They'd just go,
right.
no, that's a sin. Like,
right,
that's
exactly.
Because you're partaking in alcohol, that's sin.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I don't know.
We would just need to download the new VidAngel app.
Yeah, I've heard.
And
yeah.
it will edit
thing?
Out
it is,
all
yeah.
the graphic violence and nudity.
They're trying to do a Netflix subscription.
We can watch a 5-minute Game of Thrones episode.
Yeah. Actually, the technology is
been
probably
in the
there
world,
now.
But not up.
Yeah.
Enjoy that 27-minute season.
Automatically, like, pull a whole lot of it out.
Yeah.
Parse, like, patterns.
It's pretty, yeah. And I believe they're trying to do a subscription service. I don't know if they're wanting to do, like, in-home boxes, like hardware.
It's not that. It's an app, and you essentially go into the app and log into your Netflix or your Amazon Prime or whatever through the app, and then it automatically sends it.
Okay, so...
That's nuts!
Because I don't know if you guys remember the
TV
Christian Book
yeah.
Distributors, the CD
yeah.
catalog.
Yeah.
Remember Feature Films for Families?
Yep. Yeah.
Which was... They were sold in that... Yeah, that evangelical homeschooling curriculum, but they were actually made by the Mormons. I don't know if you didn't know that.
Feature that's
films,
amazing.
Yeah, Feature Films for Family was a
that's amazing.
Mormon company. But they got in trouble. They got sued, like, in the early 2000s because they were reselling these movies, and they had licensing for them to resell these movies, but they were editing out all the language and yeah, anything.
You can just say the good parts.
Yeah.
yeah.
So, so they got sued by the creatives, the people who directed and wrote the movies, because they're like, no, you can't do that to my film, whatever. Yeah, so I mean, it's been tried before. It'd be interesting to see how it ends up from a legal standpoint.
Yeah, well, it's already being challenged in a lot of things.
Really?
Like, well, we had a TV Guardian growing up, which was the old it
yeah,
would
yeah.
read closed captions of films and then mute it during. Intense swearing. Yeah. It actually had, it was, quick note, it was really funny because it had different levels. So you could choose, yeah, like you could choose like
nice.
Only F words, and we'll allow some S words.
Depending on your conviction.
But, exactly.
No, no.
Exactly.
It was
exactly what
like,
it was.
Like the least amount of security was like the Catholic level.
No, no, like,
and then you had the Methodist.
Yeah, you log on, it's pick your denomination.
Yeah, then
not denominational, it's just not edible. It's just the original movie.
Yeah. No, but you could set it so strict that it would, if they used the word God at all, it would mute it. Yeah, because they were afraid you were saying,
yeah.
oh God, or, you know. Yeah.
And if it's a movie being muted, they're not using it in the proper way, clearly.
Yeah. It was great. TV Guardian.
Oh, that's awesome.
A fantastic product. I'm sure there's one of those on eBay. I need to buy one and play with it.
So I don't want to keep you guys forever. I do want to ask one more question to kind of close out our time together. So our next episode we're jumping into, we're talking about drugs.
The next one?
So I would love to hear you guys' thoughts on, especially coming out of a discussion of Christian morality, how should Christians engage in or not engage in drug use?
Just say yes to drugs. Matt, you ready to go home?
No.
I mean, if you just want to give some preliminary thoughts.
I'm more interested in yours,
yeah.
because, well, how do you...
So, all things in moderation, right? What's this? What's the scripture?
C.S. Lewis 14:29?
Yes. no, he says, all things are lawful, but not all things are profitable. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will not be brought under. All things are lawful, but I will not be brought under as a slave of anything, right?
It's interesting because that actually speaks to what I was talking about just a second, like a slave to anything. Like, if you're going to be a slave to watching Game of Thrones, in that sense, in the it's going to be something between you and Christ, then you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, sorry.
At the same time, I do know there's... I'm not, I wouldn't say habitual, but regular user of marijuana. I smoke on the regular.
The salve. He uses the salve.
I don't know what that means.
And there's, I don't even know.
There's marijuana salve.
Yeah. I am acutely aware of the conviction that one of my sisters brings up all the time of, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, right? For there's no authority except mm-hmm. for God. And that marijuana is illegal in this state, therefore I should not be consuming because it's open rebellion against God.
Abortion is legal.
When she brings that up, I bring up the argument of changing the subject. because yeah, it is. It's one of the, something I enjoy and something I still kind of struggle with the fact that I am breaking the law.
So how would you feel different if you lived in Colorado?
Yeah, I would. I wouldn't. Yeah, I would. Still do it. I mean, I wouldn't feel, but I would just have to go, oh yeah, the government approves. And so that's my mindset too. I'm like, oh yeah, Caesar approves of what I'm doing now, right? So yeah. I'm really not feeling guilty because I'm feeling convicted by God. It's the fact that I'm feeling convicted by Caesar. If you maybe can understand how, I don't know, but at the same time, it's, I don't know.
There's that contrarian aspect.
Yeah, it. Yeah. Some things are bad for other people, or for everyone. Some things are okay for everybody, and some things fall in the middle. You know, somebody who struggles with alcohol addiction and has been free from alcohol for, you know, X amount of years or whatever, you probably should go grab a beer with them, you know, to minister to them or whatever. You know, the person doing meth, the person, you know, the junkie, obviously, that's something that's wrong. I think that's more of a social wrong. You have a lot of those types of drugs pervade areas along with poverty and other things as a form of escapism. So it's not the fact that there are people out there using drugs. There are the fact that people out there whose lives have turned so desperate and they're so deep in despair that that's their only way of not killing themselves, of getting by. I don't know. That's a tough issue to talk about. Especially when you're a Christian. If this was a discussion of, you know, just purely scientific, I would say, well, yeah, there's no real negative side effects of marijuana use besides you waste a lot of time. All in the same note, that's a really bad thing to do, is to spend your time wasting time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As a person, just as an individual, as a group, just to spend time doing nothing. At the same time, you're, you know, smoking weed, which makes the doing nothing seem awesome and amazing. But you're actually, you know, you're just watching the same episode of South Park you've seen 50 times already, you know, and eating too much food and going to bed, you know.
Which I'm fine doing perfectly sober.
See, that's where it gets interesting to me, though, right? Like, because there are so many Christians that would be like, yeah, absolutely, you shouldn't do that, and that's why. But then they'll just go home and, like, drink Dr. Pepper and watch Netflix till 2 in the morning mm-hmm. and waste time. And,
right.
And it's just, it's another form of escapism.
But if somebody yes. smoked a bowl and did the exact same thing, then that's, oh,
yeah. Really?
But it really, it's what you said, it's a form of escapism, and I think that's... I think that's the biggest problem with marijuana. Not that we have people out there who are driving high. It's that people out there are wasting their time getting high every day just to escape from whatever.
Yeah.
I have two thoughts on it. Number one, it's insane to me that you don't smoke, Josh, because you seem like the perfect candidate.
Really? He looks like a hippie. That's what you stop keep saying.
I have a pretty strong, like, non-rebellious, like, firstborn, cooperative, like, side of me, though.
Gotcha.
A-type personality.
Yeah.
You also go to music festivals and sleep in tents and ride your bicycle to work and wear tie-dye shirts, so whatever.
I don't fit in the box.
And then my other thought is that I think it's sort of like knowing yourself and so like for example, like I know where I'm at with alcohol. Like I can get hammered if I want. I can easily just do that, not a problem. But I also know that I can just have a beer and I'm done. And that choice is mine every time I make it. And so I think the same sense of drugs, like you, like if you're going to, as a Christian, pick up anything, whether that's drugs, alcohol, whatever it might be, any type of substance that's going to influence, you know, your physiological state, then you have to have an understanding of this is good for me or this is bad for me. And I tend to overuse, read, abuse this, or I don't, and have an understanding of that. And if you do, then you need to have a, you know, like there's people really close to me that I wouldn't have a drink at dinner with them just because it's, you know, where they're at. And I know that, and that's fine. Like, you know, that's fine. But I think it's that understanding of yourself, and it's sort of like that to him that knows to do good and does it not, but the reverse is also true. And if it's, you know, it's sin, then you shouldn't do it. And the same thing goes for like the substances. You know, if it's sin for you, then it should be, that doesn't necessarily mean it's not sin for your, you know, the guy next to you. So it's just how I look at it. At least I don't know. Cause I don't smoke. He smokes a ton. That's fine.
Don't listen to our next episode because we're going to just take apart everything wrong you just said, and just like we're gonna replay the clip piece by piece, and here's
idiots.
Where the Bible says that's sin, and here's
that would be the most reasonable thing we could do for our show.
Yeah, I welcome that because then I'll put together a counter argument or a brand that I can then use on my sister. As iron sharpens iron. So
is it the sister that came on our show that has the problem with the
no
okay.
It's my baby sister, the one who's all in the, she's in the cult now. So.
Oh yeah.
we don't have time to pursue that. Man, I wish I could.
I was just curious because she seems. I'm sure she. Jane's probably just like whatever.
Yeah.
Well, guys, thanks so much for hanging out with us. Give that some thought. Find that wherever you find podcasts.
Yeah.
Check it out. I mean, if that's what you want to do with your life.
If that's the decision you want to make.
If you really want to waste your time.
We just talked about wasting time.
If you don't feel convicted.
For real, obviously, like, it's a very different show than ours.
It is.
Not even attempting to engage the same audience. And so, but, I mean, two friends talking shop about life and politics and conspiracy theories. If that sounds like your jam, check them out. Wherever podcasts are sold.
Sam loves it.
I do listen. I listen. Yeah, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts anymore, but I listen to you guys.
Look at that. We made.
I can't tell how much of it is because I know you, and how much of it is because I like want to listen to the show. There's some mixture in there. Just
that's
like,
crazy.
I know Addison, so I want to listen to his podcast. But anyway, check it out. It's awesome, guys. Thanks so much for hanging out with us tonight. I do want to do, because this was requested. People said when we do the interviews, they want us to do a normal show. So I'm gonna do the thing of the week real quick. I have one.
Okay, quick.
So, quick thing of the week. If you have Amazon Prime, you should watch The Tick on Amazon Prime Video. It's so good.
I've seen that trailer.
Like,
is it good?
It's dark comedy. It's like in think Fargo style, like writing, even like the Fargo TV show. Superhero satire, like making fun of the current culture obsession with superhero movies. I will say if you don't want to commit to a whole season of a TV show, the pilot is significantly better than the actual expression of the show in the first season, because the pilot sets up this really cool tension. The main character is mentally ill, and you're not quite sure if it's real or he's hallucinating in the pilot. And it sets up this like really cool tension, which then the rest of the show just like drops and doesn't actually address it. But worth watching, worth your time if you like TV, if you like dark comedy that's thoughtful, if you like critique. Just kind of some of the stuff that we blindly take with like Avengers movies and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. So check that out. Guys, thanks for hanging out with us. Quick shout out as always to Kingly. Guys, thanks for letting us use your awesome music on our crappy podcast. We really, really need this. Also, shout out to Travis Teal Page. We've mentioned him several times. He's on tour right now. He'll be on tour for the next 10 days, I want to say. They're doing a show here in St. Louis if you live local at Blueberry Hill next weekend. Or I guess that's by the time this comes out, this weekend. I guess, is there anything else? Is there anything we're missing?
Probably, but sounds good.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I'm going to go read up on Nephilim conspiracy theories because I'm a heretic.
All right. I guess I'm going to go drink some artisanal water because I'm a good tipster Christian.